we call this April Fool's Eve here in late March. If you're with us live and you have some observations you'd like to share during the course of the show, or even a question that you would like for us to direct to our guest, either scroll down to the bottom of the show page. That's where you will find the link to the chat room. We'll be monitored during the course of the show, and we'll be glad to steal your great ideas during the course of the conversation if you are so inclined. Also, at the end of the show, if you wanted to go ahead and listen again, the full archive will be available over at Spreaker, and you can always go to iTunes or any of the other aggregators and subscribe to the podcast, and that'll save you all the trouble from manually downloading it in the future. But now we're going to go ahead and dive into today's show, and it's going to be kind of fun because it's going to be a dedicated show on a conversation that has come up on a not infrequent basis over the course of the years that we've been doing NIDRATS. And what we're looking forward to is here in the next decade, the 2020s, for a variety of reasons. Every generation, every decade is challenging, but there are a lot of things folding up together in the 2020s. It's going to be a challenge for those that are leading our Navy. And what we want to talk about mostly today is the generations that are going to lead our Navy and our fleet through the course of the next decade. It's every generation is slightly different because of their experiences and their backgrounds, and the upcoming generation of leaders are no different. We're going to talk about what other people should look at, what has formed their experiences in the first decade or so that this cohort has had on active duty, how their priorities may be a little different than people may think or previous generations, and generally just find out how we can all get along together. And our guests to discuss these and any other issues that may pop into our noggin during the course of the show is Jimmy Drennan, when he's not masquerading as the salty millennial for US&I blogger and Twitter types, will recognize him. Jimmy is a surface warfare officer and a lieutenant commander in the United States Navy, assigned to U.S. Central Command. He also, as a side gig, is president with of the kids over at the Center for International Maritime Security, or CIMSEC. And as always, Jimmy's on here today as just Jimmy. His opinions are his own and do not necessarily, though they probably should, represent those of his command, the U.S. Navy, or any other organizations he is associated with. Jimmy, welcome to NIDRATS.
Thanks. Yeah. My views don't represent the Navy or anybody else. Probably, probably pretty unique, but that's all right. I'm enjoying the run that I'm having with the salty millennial, and I am honored to be invited onto your show. So thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, we really appreciate it. You know, it's also kind of fun having you on here because we've got the three generations. Well, two of the three generations, because my generation is always ignored. We've got a baby boomer with my co-host. I'm Gen X and won't shut up about it because nobody else is talking about us. And we got a millennial on board. So we've got everybody covered, but my kids' generation, who, matter of fact, my youngest daughter was born in 2001. So she just turned 18. So,
so it's Generation Z, right?
Yeah, they exist to bother yours. So there we go.
I'm having a lot of fun with that. They're the target of the millennial generation. So every generation has its target. So I'm enjoying that.
It just to kick things off, I mentioned that your side gig is president over at CIMSEC, and I think most of our listeners are familiar with CIMSEC, and if not, they should make themselves acquainted. If you could talk a little bit about CIMSEC's charter, what's been developed there over the last few years, and what are some of the topics you've seen bubble up since you took over your tenure?
Okay, So thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk CIMSEC. I've been really enjoying being in a leadership position as the president for the last couple of months. I assumed that role, but I've been involved with the group for a while now, either as a writer or editor. The Center for International Maritime Security, and it was started several years ago by Scott Chaney Peters, who still is involved as the director. And just as a way to get a meeting place, a place where people could bring their ideas to light, young naval professionals from around the world, not just U.S. Navy, and share their thoughts and kind of have a low bar to entry. You know, we were trying to be not intimidating. We're trying to make it so that, you know, a young ensign or a lieutenant has a thought, wants to put it on paper. And then, you know, and the Naval Institute does a great job of that, by the way. But what we try to do is focus on just letting people express their opinions without any filter, without any endorsement of the U.S. Navy or any Navy. And also to get away from the traditional topics that the U.S. Navy is cares about. So there's an international flavor to it. There's a non-military maritime security flavor to it. And those are all very important, and so we want to emphasize those. We see our niche in that realm of international aspect with the commercial aspect of maritime security. So yeah, the website www.simsec.org. You can see the recent articles scrolling through. You know, we cover everything from Russia's activities in the Sea of Azov to the future of the Indo-Pacific region. So, and we have topic weeks, which are always popular. We pick a topic and we do a call for articles, and our editors take those in and edit and then publish. And we have a chance for people to express their ideas on a variety of topics. And so, we do that from time to time, and it's fun for us and fun for the contributors and the readers. We also do a fiction week. So one of the topics that we always hit once a year is our fiction week, and we like to let people just do a little naval sci-fi, and that's always a big hit. So, yeah, so it's just a way for people that are interested in the naval study to express their ideas in public and then get some feedback. So yeah, we're having fun with it, and we got some good things coming up in the future, trying to continue this idea of the topic weeks into sort of a compendium where we take several topic weeks over the course of a year and then compile those and see if we can build on that. So yeah.
Well, to ground you back in the salty millennial world,
yeah.
I've really enjoyed your satire, but that appears on the USNI blog. At least I assume it's satire. But what kind of reaction have you gotten from and feedback have you received from some of the targets that you've or issues that you've raised in this satirical fashion?
Yeah, it's been all over the spectrum, ranging from would the Naval Institute please stop giving this guy a platform, to hey yeah, keep going, this is great, we love what you're doing. So it really has not been 100% good or bad, but it's been very informative for me, and I guess I get enough feedback to tell me that. You know, I'm having an impact. You know, I'm causing a reaction, good and bad, and that's meaningful. So I'm enjoying what I'm doing. Yeah, and some of the feedback sometimes is when people don't realize it's satire, and then they come back pretty aggressively, and I enjoy that because I can play around on the comments and kind of go back and forth. And you know, if somebody gets really angry at me for an idea that I propose that is clearly satire, then you know, that's on them. I don't know. It doesn't bother me too much. And then if somebody just doesn't think I'm funny, then that's fine too. That's I'm not going to be offended. You know, we're military officers. We're supposed to be able to. We're supposed to have the you know, the intestinal fortitude to express our ideas. And so that's what I'm doing. And I try to keep it, you know, inside the lines of professionalism, but, you know, to me, humor is not unprofessional. So I'm using humor as a way to express some of the ideas that I have. I've been writing about the naval profession for years now, not as long as you guys have. And, you know, I'm still a relative newcomer, but, you know, for 15 years that I've been in the Navy, I've probably been publishing for 10 or 11 of those years. And I kind of noticed that there's a pretty small circle of people that will read the things that you publish. And, you know, as I started to think about ways to reach a broader audience, you know, humor came to mind. And so as I started to hit on some of the topics that I wanted to hit on, I thought, well, let me try this with a different angle. And then that's when the idea for the Salty Millennial came up, because of the whole topic of millennials and how they're so maligned. And it's just funny to me that people look at the millennials as oh God, millennials, they're terrible. And I just thought, well, I'm gonna play along with it. I mean, I didn't even realize I was a millennial until I looked at the date ranges one day, and I thought, oh, dang, I guess I am a millennial. So all right, well, I guess I better own it then. And so that's what I came up with the idea for this kind of character, and I've been enjoying it ever since.
Yeah, I get a kick out of that because, the millennials, they're in their mid-30s.
yeah, I know.
they're not young kids, people. You know, John Paul Jones, the best years were almost a decade behind him at that point. And
yeah, right.
Yeah,
I mean, my cohort's going to be taking command of their, their ships, their destroyers and submarines pretty soon. So it's, get ready or not, the millennials are in command.
Yeah, I got, I started this alter ego before I hit 40. And especially about 3 or 4 years later, I had a couple of young little whippersnappers send me some hate mail about, you're old and out of touch. And I'm really controlling myself. I still have their email addresses, emailing them back and going, hey, guy, you're the same age I was, or you started calling me old and out of touch. So welcome aboard. But I wouldn't
welcome
do that.
Aboard, that I try to keep it positive. I get a lot of emails, and they're mostly positive. And, I respond to everybody. And, it's one of those things where, if you took the time to email me, then that's a good thing, and I'll email you back. And if you didn't bother to say anything nice, then that's fine too, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad PR is still PR. Take it. The comment you made previously kind of folded into at my home blog. I rarely do guest posts, but tomorrow I'm having a guest post by Brian McGrath, who is roughly the same age I am. And it's kind of a Gen X skipper talking to the millennial leader who's about to take command with some observations there. And you're right, the millennials have been really maligned. I think that is, I can talk as the guy who's sandwiched in the middle. A lot of the baby boomers have really obsessed about their kids, who are mostly millennials, and you have that usual parent-child. They're both big cohorts together, which makes sense because the big bulge of boomers have big bulges of millennials. And millennials basically are senior lieutenants through lieutenant commander, who mostly got their commission after 2001. And that's always kind of low-hanging fruit to say, that's the most influential part of this generation of leaders versus others, blah, blah, blah. But going one layer deeper than that, for the Gen X or the baby boomer navalist out there, from your perspective, what were the two or three underlying common themes that were the experience of these leaders as they were ensigns, JGs, lieutenants, and put on their gold oak leaves and lost their JOPA card? What are some of those underlying experiences that other generations either didn't have influenced their view of things, or perhaps was not as big of an impact to them?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think 9/11 is definitely a starting point. I commissioned let's see, so 9/11 happened when I was a midshipman, and then I commissioned in December of 04. So we were still in the very early stages of the global war on terror, and there was maybe by that point, 3 years later, the emotion that was running so high maybe started to subside a little bit. But by and large, I mean, we were still going to the Middle East on our strike group deployments, and that's where I started out. And there was still a lot of connection to 9/11 and why we were doing what we were doing. Over time, that faded, and we continued, at least in my community, and that probably includes the aviators as well. We did these strike group deployments on a rotational basis to the Middle East. And there was just gradually the connection to 9/11, the clear kind of purpose and mission just gradually subsided. And we have, now 2019, we are still fighting in Afghanistan, and we know it's changed, right? I mean, from a naval perspective, we used to park an aircraft carrier in the Northern Arabian Sea, and we launched sorties all day long, or we would go into the Gulf and launch sorties into Iraq. And that's kind of gone back and forth with the rise of ISIS. But I'm kind of being very East Coast centric, because that's been my experience. I did four tours on two cruisers. Both were a shotgun cruiser to a carrier. So my perspective is kind of unique. But that by the time that I did my most recent deployment, there was not really a direct connection to 9/11 anymore. It was more about, this is just the way the world is now, and if we want to secure our national interests and protect the homeland, this is what we're going to have to do. There's some validity to that, but it takes a lot more effort to think through it, and it's not as obvious. And so there's some disillusionment, I think, disenchantment with some people. That applies to officers and enlisted, the crew, the wardroom, the commanding officers, the admirals. I've seen it in all ranks, where there's just this. You start to have to apply your own critical thinking as to why you're doing this. It's not just about, well, 9/11, so we got to go and kick some ass. It's different. And then, of course, on the West Coast, that's entirely different, because you don't have that. But that's where you see the future threat of China. And so you have almost as 9/11, the influence of 9/11 as far as purpose faded, the influence of China as a purpose has risen. And so I think you see a clear purpose in our Navy in the Pacific in terms of what they're dealing with and what they're getting ready for. And so that's part of the reason that I started to write, was to say, okay, I don't think we are where we need to be right now in terms of proficiency, in terms of readiness, not just individuals, but also our Navy writ large, ship numbers and things like that are pretty well documented. We're not where we want to be, so we need to improve. And we don't need to talk about in the public how great we are. I mean, it's fine if you want to. I don't care. But I'm more interested in identifying the weak points and improving, and to not be shy about saying, no, in this one area, we're not good enough. We're not good enough in this area, whatever it may be. We need to improve. And let's just, open kimono. Here's what we're doing. And, yeah, I get there's some security. There's some operational security issues, but in general, I'm more of a fan of just being open and honest, saying, okay, we got to improve, because you're really talking to your force. You're talking to your own people, your own team, and telling them, hey, I acknowledge that we're not where we want to be. We need to improve. And so that's part of what I try to do in my writing, is to say, okay, I am identifying a weak point. And part of it's cultural too, is just saying, hey, our culture kind of is not where it needs to be. We need to be embracing this idea of improvement, of continuous improvement, of acknowledging where we're not where we need to be, and then get there. So, you know, I kind of think about the commander of Indo-PACOM recently said he's got like half the submarines he needs. You know, he's out there saying in public like, yeah, we don't have what we need. In order to compete with China in the future, we're going to need more ships and submarines. You know, he talked about losing the quantitative edge in 2025. I mean, that's right around the corner. That's all pretty well documented. But I think there's a similar issue with our culture and the way that we lead. You know, I think we want to turn that around, take a round turn on that too. So I try to hit on those topics because we're going to need to improve in all these areas. If we, you know, this great power competition that everybody talks about, it's coming, you know, like it or not, hopefully later rather than sooner. But, you know, I think a lot of the millennials out there are starting to realize that, that's going to be our fight. You know, hopefully not. Hopefully it's, you know, it's not in our generation, but if not, then it's going to be some future generation. And so we are where we are. We better get ready because we're not going to be able to call mommy and daddy anymore. So anyway, rambling answer to that easy question.
No, it's not an easy question because humor among the military has always been, at least for my ancient generation, has always been a way to get rid of the cynicism or deal with the cynicism and frustration caused by in the view of usually the deck plate sailor, misplaced priorities. And I think that part of the job that you engage in as a court jester is to point out, and just like the jesters in the old days did, point out to the king, hey, you know, this is just foolishness. So the things you skewer, the things you've gone after, is that what you're looking at? The priorities are messed up. So we're spending so much time worried about task force uniform instead of, do our people have a nice place to live? Are the ships capable of going to sea? Do our SWOs know the rules of the road? I mean, is that what you've gone after for that reason?
I try to. That's exactly what I try to do. I try to identify where we need to focus. Where I think that we could improve, and we spend a lot of energy on things like uniforms and public affairs, it's silly to me. So I'm not afraid to point out problems without solutions. I was criticized for that early on, where I was pointing out these problems, and they would say, well, you know, the commenters would say, well, what's your recommendation? I don't know. I mean, there's a problem. Let's figure it out. And because I've done that in my writing and in my career as an officer, I know that it's not professional for me to walk into my captain's cabin and say, sir, there's an issue. I have no idea what to do, but there's an issue. I mean, you can do that, but you better be prepared to give your best thoughts on what you might do, because otherwise you're just putting it on somebody else. That's fine. I think that's part of being a professional, is to be prepared with your recommendations. But when you're writing and you're trying to improve your profession, I think it's okay to say, I've identified an area that sucks. We're just not meeting the mark here. I don't know what to do. And people that read it can then say, well, I have an idea. That's what I want to do. I want to encourage this massive brain power that we have in the Navy to come out and say, well, I have ideas. I mean, let's try these, you know, kind of crowdsourcing. And I think there's potential there because, I mean, you know, we've all written articles where we lay out our grand plan for making the Navy better. And, you know, how that goes, right? Some people read it, maybe like, you know, a handful of people will read it. And one out of 1,000 of those papers will actually have any traction. So that wasn't my intent to say, okay, I'm going to come out with all my great ideas. You know, Jimmy Drennan is gonna solve the Navy and make us great again. No, I was just saying, hey, like let's just be open about the problems we have. And I bet you that somebody somewhere has a good idea. Let's encourage them to come out and speak. And let's not, you know, encourage this culture of retribution for somebody speaking their mind and saying, oh, well, this guy, I'm like, what's he do? He's never even been in command. Like, he can't speak out on these things. Well, okay. Well, so what I'm trying to do is to prove that, you know, I'm still standing, and you know, nobody is coming, you know, muzzled me yet. And it might happen, but I'm trying to at least demonstrate that it's, you know, it's okay to speak your mind. And if if there are consequences, so what? I mean, aren't we, you know, we're in uniform. We're supposed to be able to, you know, we're officers. We're supposed to speak our mind. So that's what I want to encourage, that kind of discourse. It seems to have gotten some traction. A few of the articles that I've written are actually based on people's emails and comments to me, and you know, that they weren't even my ideas originally. They said, hey, you know, you should write about this. I heard about this, you know, try this. And I would say, well, you know, you should write. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to encourage them to write it, and they're not quite well doing that. So I said, okay, well, I'll take it and I'll put it in my own voice, and I'll put it out there and see what happens. So it's getting some traction. I'm encouraged by it, I guess.
That's always a frustration, and it's something that, you know, we talk about here on a regular basis. You know, a topic or a subtopic on no small number of shows we've done is trying to encourage people to speak out. And I think you're exactly right. Every time you identify a problem, if you can offer a solution, great. But there's no problem of doing the equivalent of going, you know, hey, there's a strange vibration in frame 20. It's just not right,
yeah.
And it's got a funk to it. We probably should have some experts go look at why there's a vibration and a funk up at frame 20. No, I don't know how to stop the vibration or get rid of the funk, but, you know, let's go check it out. It's okay to
Absolutely.
Do that with
yeah.
big ideas. And I over at SimSec, you probably have your, and plus what you've been doing in other areas as well to encourage people to write. You probably have a better view on this than I do, but a concern that I've had in the last really 36 months has been a ongoing retreat from the public space for conversations
yeah.
from senior leadership, where as a matter of policy, we're just not talking, and I'm sorry, I don't buy that we can't talk because of security reasons. I'm old enough to remember the Cold War, where we had a much larger existential threat to the U.S. than these medium threats that we have right now existed, and things were much more open. But with that type of background, have you seen whether that is impacted more than perhaps it would otherwise? Your midshipman through lieutenant commander willing to step forward and say, hey, I have something to say about subject X.
Yeah, I don't. It's interesting because I think that that generation, you know, younger than me, is still willing to come forward and speak. You know, we had a bunch of midshipmen that wrote articles. I think that the Naval Institute did a contest for them, and they published a bunch of their articles, and I did a little riff on Generation Z and kind of, you know, satirically complained about these young whippersnappers and they're putting out their ideas before they were even commissioned. But I think it's great because they're out there expressing their ideas. They see things, you know, even at the academy, they go on summer cruise and they see things. And I remember seeing things when I was a midshipman. I just thought, well, I mean, maybe that's just the way it is. I don't know. And there's a little bit of that, right? You don't have perspective when you're that new to an organization. So you have to have an appreciation for, okay, I might not have the whole picture, but, you know, your perspective coming in as a fresh set of eyes is valuable. And any good leader that I've ever had has always told me that, you know, you're new here, so tell me what we're doing wrong. And so it's a good thing, I think, to see the younger midshipmen and young and junior officers and not just officers, just junior personnel coming forward. And it's encouraging to me that they haven't kind of retreated, because I've seen, like you said, there's been this almost a policy of, you know, don't speak out. You know, we're under a cyber attack by the Chinese, and we need to maintain OPSEC. So let's not be in the public eye. And okay, well, I agree with you. I don't think that retreating from the course, you know, the exchange of ideas is the way to counter the cyber threat. It just doesn't add up to me. I mean, clearly I don't want to be exposing anything classified. I mean, I don't want to be talking about anything I shouldn't be talking about, but just in terms of our naval culture and leadership and just whatever other, there's a whole host of topics that we can discuss that I don't think are OPSEC concerns. It's not an OPSEC concern to say, hey, I think we can do better. I mean, the Chinese Navy can do a hell of a lot better too. I mean, they're, you know, we probably, on the whole, are still superior to them, and it's not like there's no, put emotion aside. I mean, just it's okay to evaluate yourself in public and to continue to do that. I think it's the hallmark of a high performing organization, which I think we are in the Navy, and I think we can continue to be, but not if we shy away. You know, I wrote the public affairs lethality blog post just to kind of hit on that idea of, hey, you know, let's shut it all down and enforce the narrative and make sure everybody knows that how great we are. And it's silly, I think, to believe that we can do that. And the proof is the young officers and midshipmen that are still out there writing, you know, they haven't retreated and they're going to continue to write. Cause you know, if you talk about one thing that is probably different from my generation to yours is the, we've been exposed to this constant exchange of information, 24/7. And I think that has an impact. And, it has an impact both on us individually in terms of, you know, our psychology and how we interact with the world, but it also has an impact on how people perceive us, because they've been exposed to this narrative of the millennials, and they've been bombarded with it. And so that constant access to information and exchange of ideas and open flow that the internet provides, you know, this and it's even more pronounced in the Generation Z. You know, I don't think that by our leaders saying that we need to, you know, we have OPSEC concerns and we're under cyber attack, I just don't think that's going to stop the free and open exchange of ideas, which I think is a good thing. I think that we need to continue doing that. So that's encouraging to me. So
one of the recent blog posts in Proceedings was not by you, oddly enough, but was by a Master Chief telling the Chiefs of the Navy to get their act together, basically.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And we're talking about millennials and I guess maybe even some Generation Z young men and women who are now the chiefs and first class in the fleet. I haven't been out there in a while, but how is working with those folks? Are they? Is it different? Did you have chiefs who were when you were growing up who were of Sal's generation?
Yeah, I have worked with excellent chiefs. You know, it's hard because I don't have a basis to compare other than my own experience. But I certainly have had chiefs, my own chief in my first division, who's somebody that I'm still friends with today, and I can remember some of the advice and leadership that he gave me. And then all the way through when, you know, I just came off of my last ride and some senior chiefs and master chiefs that I thought were great leaders. But, I mean, I've seen the other side of it, too. I've seen chiefs that I thought clearly should not be chiefs. And I've seen second classes that outperformed them on a day-to-day basis. And that's tough. So I think because of that, I can see where Master Chief Houlihan, I think, is who wrote that article. I can see where he was coming from when he wrote that, you know, it's time to earn back the sailor's trust. Because if you just have a few, you know, some like say a few bad apples, right? If you have enough of those bad apples in the mess, it starts to taint the reputation, and it's a cultural thing. And even if you do have some outstanding chiefs, well, they're tolerating the the poor performing Chiefs, and people observe that, and it has an impact. So, you know, I'm glad that he wrote that. I try not to comment too much on the Chiefs' mess. It's not for me to comment. There's plenty of things about the wardroom that I can attack and you know, stay within the lane that I am in. But I was happy to read that post. I thought it was direct. It was necessary to a point, you know. And you know, it may not be as bad as he was making it out to be, but so what? And, you know, then good. It's a good thing. But to go out there and say, hey, we've got an issue. Well, and a lot of people resonated with that message. It was very, very positive feedback. So that's an indication that he wasn't out in left field. A little background to that, I don't know if you know, but he posted something that went viral on Facebook before he wrote that article, and it was a picture of a whiteboard where somebody had written, it was a young sailor that had written, I have not met a chief that I aspire to be. And it was a part of a result of a counseling session with that sailor. And Master Chief Houlihan, I think, asked him a question, you know, what chief would you like to aspire to be? You know, ask like, who's your role model in the chief's mess? And that was the kid's response was, I haven't met a chief that I aspire to be. And that, I think, kind of stopped him in his tracks. And he said, oh man, you know, this is an isolated case. This is perhaps a broader issue. And so I think that led to him writing the post. And I bravo Zulu. I thought that was great. Hopefully it's not as bad as, you know, the entire Chiefs mess has got this cultural rot. You know, I've written about the surface Navy having cultural rot. I'm not ashamed or afraid to say that. I think there is an issue. I think that we are starting to identify it and kind of take a round term, and that's a good thing. We'll get there. I have faith. I think that, you know, we are, you know, the United States Navy is just a proud and strong organization with a ton of history. It's not a bad thing to say, you know, for my generation to say, hey, we are not where we need to be, so let's get there. And I think we're doing that. So, you know, take some pride in that. But you just have to be able to say those things first. You have to be able to say, hey, there's a problem, which is like what Master Chief Houlihan said, and then go from there and just and improve. But stating there's a problem in whatever way you do it, whether that's his way or satire, it might annoy some people, but there's nothing wrong with that. It's just state the problem and then figure it out and then get better. So yeah.
Yeah,
I hope he keeps writing. I thought that was great. I do hope he keeps writing.
I do as well. I'm in full alignment with you there. I thought that was exactly what was needed. And, you know, if not more cowbell, more Master Chief, let's hear it. Because it's easy for us to talk about, you know, wardroom this, JO this, senior leader that. But as we all know, you got a good chief, good senior chief, or a good command master chief. I think that one of my command master chiefs had out in Hawaii. I mean, she was old school, crusty, rusty master chief. All you had to do was just raise an eyebrow, and she was going to take care of business. She was just a beautiful thing to have. We need to have more of that. And I might have it wrong, but you're talking about it. I thought back to, I believe it was in the incident that took place in 2017 in Westpac. I believe it was the only person on the bridge of the McCain who really had the plot was the bosun's mate of the watch.
I remember that.
I would love to see more come out. We're hearing a lot about the Fitzgerald for obvious reasons, but I really would like to see a good deconstruction replay of that experience. And I saw it at the beginning, and I wasn't alone. That bosun's mate of the watch. We could, every bridge could use somebody like him. And let me roll this to you, because a lot of this, I'll give the benefit of the doubt, it's because of the retreat from the marketplace of ideas in the public space. But we're being told by a lot of people that, you know, let not your heart be troubled about what happened in Westpac in 2017. We've made changes. It's being implemented in the fleet. Everything's working out just fine. What do people need to know, and are the significant changes that it's been over 18 months plus that quote Big Navy unquote has done to help mitigate some of the latent causes and institutional challenges that we saw in Westpac of 27 that everybody is telling us without specifics is being taken care of and the changes are being made? What have you seen from your point of view?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of energy and motivation to fix the problems that were identified in those two collisions. But I hate to use a catchphrase. It's a wicked problem, right? Because nobody can agree on what the problem is. Nobody can even agree that there is a problem. You know, you talk about systemic issue, and all of a sudden you have this huge debate about whether it was the captain of the captains of those ships, or whether it was a broader surface Navy problem. And you can't even get to square one on trying to address systemic issues without causing a debate. So that is frustrating. But if you pass the two collisions, because I mean I would have probably told you before those two collisions that there were still issues that needed to be solved, and I think a lot of people would agree with me. We're not where we need to be. We'll get there, but we're not now. We weren't in 2017. Maybe it was a wake-up call, and that's a good thing. And the problems that the surface Navy identified were the two reviews that we did, and it was not isolated to just those two ships. I'm not commenting on the culpability of the people that were involved in those collisions, but there are some broader issues that were identified, and we're working to fix those. But to say that here 18 months later everything's fixed, I mean, I am not out in Westpac. I'm not in the fleet. I talk to people that are, so I can only tell you what people tell me. We have more work to do, and you know, and my thought is these problems are probably going to take as long to fix as they did to develop, and they didn't develop in 18 months. They developed over a long period of time. You could point to the Swass-in-a-Box training debacle that I was a product of that. It didn't work. It was a bad idea from the start. And we're slowly recovering from that. We're a whole generation of surface warfare officers. We're trained by a box set of CDs. But that's just one. The mismatch of resources to demand is something that I know you're familiar with, and it's no secret. If we don't have enough ships and crews to meet the demand signal from the combatant commanders, then it'll continue to be an issue, and it'll continue to be an issue that is that rests on the shoulders of the crews that go out to sea. So, we hear from our combatant commanders that talk about how we are making progress, and you know, our fleet forces commander says, well, okay, now I'm now saying no to the combatant commander, or PAC fleet says I'm saying no to the combatant commander when I can't send a ship or a strike group because they're not ready, and that's a good thing, but it doesn't change the fact that the combatant commander is still saying I only have half the submarines that I need. You know, I only have percent of the ships that I need. So the demand signal is still there. It's not an easy thing to fix. And, you know, global politics being what they are, you really can't change that overnight. You can think of interesting ways. I mean, the dynamic force employment concept that was instituted under Secretary Mattis, I think that's a great idea. I think it's brilliant. And it's a way that we can kind of reset the force without just retreating completely and give us some flexibility and also allow us to reset. Those are all positive things. We're going to need that. We're going to need I hate to oversimplify it, but it's kind of a supply and demand curve. I mean, we either need to up the supply or reduce the demand curve, or think of clever ways to bring them into balance. But that kind of, I think that those general big levers are the factors. Now, the factors to improving the surface community, alleviating the collateral duties demands. There's a lot of things that are in the list of recommendations and the two reviews. And a lot of that, I mean, we can do, but until we figure out a way to balance our supply and demand curves, we're going to have a long road to hoe, I guess, so to speak. So
when you're on the tours you had and on board your cruisers, did a new commanding officer ever come on board and give his watch officers, potential watch officers, a rules of the road test?
Yeah, I took rules of the road tests when I was on board. We had to recertify as officers of the deck under a new captain when the new captain came on board. So I remember taking an officer of the deck oral board for a new captain, even though I was already qualified. So I had to, and part of that was answering rules of the road questions. I had to prove to the new captain that I was capable of being his OOD and running his bridge. So yeah, we did that.
Does it seem odd to you that the OODs on, I mean, I hate to keep harping on this one, but
yeah.
you did put up something in your Salty Herald about, let's have the fleet.
Oh, hello?
Either one, you
hello?
There? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Well, it looks like maybe they had a nuke go off, he'll come back. He'll come back in. His line just dropped. Did you have enough there to find a question?
Yeah.
You want me to roll your fresh?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think he was talking about rules of the road. I put up a picture of someone, just a meme talking about why don't we just have periodic rules of the road test, but you know, ATG, a float training group, comes on board randomly, unannounced, and gives rules of the road tests. And I got some interesting feedback. You know, some people said, well, you know, it's not about just taking tests. You know, we need to be able to demonstrate. But I was thinking along those lines because we had a after those two collisions, the Surface Force conducted a survey of the waterfront and did a rules of the road test, and the results were pretty bad among JOs. It was just kind of a pop quiz on rules of the road, and I thought, well, that's I'm not too surprised by that. It's unfortunate, but why don't we keep doing that? You know, that's one data point. So let's get more data. Let's do that periodically and see if we're improving or not. And make them unannounced, and we don't have to cover every ship every time, but let's continue. You know, we do spot checks for maintenance. So let's do periodic spot checks on our rules of the road knowledge and see if we're improving or not. It's not the answer, because it's not the only answer. You know, you have to continue to teach, but I'm, you know, especially if you do something like you take those results and you feed them up to the CNO, so they have full visibility, then commanding officers are going to be pretty motivated to not fail those, you know, and so you might see some pretty good training happening on those ships. So it's just a thought. I would like to see more of that. I don't want to, you know, it's not to shame people. It's just to capture the state of our fleet and get more data.
Well, Eagle One's popped back in, but you, I think you got the essence of most of this stuff. Let me ask you a really broad question here,
yeah.
Because I know when I when I strapped on my lieutenant commander stuff after being a senior lieutenant and all the great things that come from that, one thing that always hit my mind is, you know, people are up the chain, seem really, really concerned about X. And I don't see why anybody cares about that. What we really care about is W, Y, and Z. Are there some things out there that you see people up the chain are investing a lot of time in that you just don't see the bang in the buck in the fleet that you would much rather have them investing in their time, efforts, and professional capital in instead?
Oh, that is a great question. So first of all, I always try to acknowledge that I am a lieutenant commander in the middle of a naval career, and I do not have the perspective of admirals and senior executives. So as much as I am outspoken, and I love to speak out on a range of topics, and I also know that just because I'm not thinking along the same lines as some admiral is, doesn't mean he's wrong. It just means that we disagree, and there's a very good chance that I just don't have the perspective to understand why that's important. So I try to remember that, but I also know there's a phrase that I picked up. There's a common phrase that we probably have all heard. It's good ideas have no rank. We talk about it in terms of military innovation. You know, it can come from anywhere. Well, the converse of that is also true. You know, bad ideas have no rank. And, you know, we as officers, you know, relatively junior officers, should feel empowered to say, wait a minute, boss. I don't think that's a good idea. You know, and then, you know, you might get shut down. You might, you know, and obviously the venue is important. You don't want to call your boss out in a public forum. You know, just because you disagree and just because you're the junior officer doesn't mean you're wrong. The captain or admiral might not be seeing something that you see. So when I look at the state of the fleet, and, you know, I know that I think that we have some improving to do. I look at culture. Culture is a huge part of it for me. It's not an easy thing to solve. But I think that is the engine that I think will drive the improvement that will ultimately lead to our ability to you know, accomplish our mission, you know, win our wars at sea. And starting with the culture, I think, is a big thing. And you know, I don't see enough. I don't see as much of that from the higher leadership levels. You know, there's been a resistance apparent to me in the wake of the two collisions in the Pacific to acknowledge a sort of a systemic problem, and I understand it. It's frustrating. There's an ongoing legal proceeding or multiple legal proceedings. So, you know, it's a delicate issue, but I think that it would be good, I think, to see our leadership kind of acknowledging that some of the things that I hear from the fleet, from my level and junior, in terms of just improving and reforming the culture, because that's like at the DNA level. If you can start to turn that around and make it into a positive contribution, then it's a force multiplier. You know, then it can start to drive innovation and efficiency and effectiveness and all these other things. So so that's kind of one of the areas that I get frustrated with is when we talk about how everything's just fine, you know, or like retention. Like, no, retention, you know, I wrote an article about aviation retention and how there's public affairs officers talking about how, you know, quoting statistics, and quite honestly, statistics can tell you anything you want them to tell you. They paint this rosy picture where I am being shown other statistics that would say otherwise. And then you see an article by a local TV station in Norfolk, and they did a very good job of just investigating, and they put out this article, and it was contrary to what the public affairs officer was trying to say. And so I just kind of pointed it out, like, hey, this article says a lot of the opposite of the things that you're trying to say. I would just like to, let's just talk about it and see if we can figure it out, because just saying that retention is good doesn't help you. In fact, that's dangerous. So let's identify where things are bad or where things need improving. Let's not even assign, you know, goodness and badness to it. Let's just say, here, we're not meeting the mark. We need to improve. Okay, well, let's see what we can do. And if we refuse to admit there's a problem, then it won't get any better. If we admit there's a problem, we could be wrong, and that would be great. But if there is a problem, then okay, let's work to solve it. So, you know, junior officer retention is just one of those issues where you see people in senior positions and in public affairs positions try to paint a rosy picture. And, you know, I, not just me, but I get feedback from the fleet that says that's bullshit. So I call them out on it, and hopefully that does some good. I don't know. We'll see.
I'm kind of struck the difference between an approach that a corporation, and I used to work for corporations, takes to problems that they identify down the road where, you know, as you just said, they identify a problem, they take steps to fix whatever it takes to fix that problem. Instead of trying to put a gloss on it, listen, we live in the best of all possible worlds and we're doing the best of all possible jobs.
Is that
because we're more concerned about image instead of worried about actually getting the job done?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's image. I don't know if it's individuals in high levels that are concerned for their jobs. I don't think it is. I kind of have an inherent faith in leaders that get to the highest levels of the military that they have some inherent courage that got them there. So I don't think they're afraid of losing their jobs and you know their image. And, you know, they want to maintain their reputation, but I don't know if it's image so much. But the DC area, I know that budget tends to be a primary focus, and sometimes I wonder if a service or a branch of the military starts to acknowledge deficiencies, that they're afraid of losing budget dollars, which I don't know if that even makes sense, but it's interesting to me because they want to it's almost like we want to advertise to Congress what great things we're doing with the budget dollars. So please give us more. I that doesn't help. It doesn't help if we're it's almost like we're doing an IO campaign on Congress. And I don't know if that makes any sense. So, I hope it's not image.
Yeah, sometimes I don't know, is that an IO program against or a PSYOPS program against Congress?
I hope it's not PSYOPs, because that would be entirely illegal on many levels.
Yeah, if you ever wanted to get a German staff officer spun up, just make a comment about PSYOPs, get your own people. He'll rage for about 45 minutes. It's highly entertaining.
Oh. Okay.
Speaking of raging for 45 minutes, we managed to make an hour without raging about anything. And Jimmy, it's been a real fast hour. Really enjoyed having you on. Want to give you an opportunity here. If people wanted to keep track of your writing and what you're doing, where would you like for them to keep a focus on? And do you have some stuff bubbling up in the background that people might be worthwhile to look for over the course of the next few weeks?
Yeah, thanks. So saltyherald.com. It's a salty herald, herald.com is my blog, and everything kind of goes through there. I have a weekly post on the USNI blog. In fact, tomorrow you'll have one. It deals with naval education and the college admissions scandal, and it's my open letter to rich people and how they have screwed me in my ability to bribe people to get a higher education, and now I'm going to have to earn it. So it's a very angry letter to rich people. So that'll be out tomorrow. Let's see. Oh, I just started a podcast. So it'll be mine. So it's in the same vein as Salty Millennial Podcast. We're calling it Salt Force One. And you can find that on, there's a different website that you can find it on, Salty Herald. And our first episode was yesterday, and I just have a buddy that I talk to. He's not Navy. He's just a regular Joe. And I try to explain to a regular audience some of the things that we in the naval circles care so much about, but maybe the public doesn't understand or doesn't care about. And it's kind of interesting. It's kind of funny. We kind of get in our little bubble in the naval circles, and it's funny how it's received when you hear it from the other end. So we do that. We'll probably do that once a week. And then I also branched out to Navy Times. I had an article that they posted on Navy Times last week, and so check that out. It's called Go Lead Yourself, and I talk about the importance of self-leadership to everybody. So a little tongue-in-cheek, always trying to have a good message, but trying to do it in a way that is at least entertaining or amusing. And not everybody likes it, but enough people do that. Apparently, Surf War did not like the Go Lead Yourself article, which is I wasn't really sure why, because I thought I had a pretty positive message, but I guess they didn't like the tongue-in-cheek style. Oh, well.
Oh, well, you can't make people have a sense of humor, but thanks again, Jimmy, and best of luck with you and your friend with your podcast, and we look forward to the next opportunity to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on, guys, and I look forward to it.
Been a pleasure.
All right. Take care, guys.
And thank you very much, everybody, for joining us for another edition of MidRats. Until next time, I hope you have a great Navy day. Cheers.
Molly wrote a neat reply to Irish Paddy O, saying Mike Maloney wants to marry me, and so leave the Strand and Piccadilly, or you'll be to blame. For love has fairly drove me silly, hoping you're the same. It's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. Goodbye, Piccadilly.
Welcome to MidRats with Sal from Commander Salamander and Eagle One from Eagle Speak at Sea or Shore, your home for a discussion of national security issues and all things maritime.
And welcome aboard, everybody. This is aforementioned Sal, along with my co-host, the ever genial Eagle One of Eagle Speak. Thank you very much for joining.